This morning, I have titled our service, Giving Back. And it comes from Philippians, and I have been doing a lot of thinking about some of the stuff that has taken place in my life in the last month or so. Some of you know that I went back to San Diego to visit my old high school, and I went back for my 40th, I know, I can't believe it either, my 40th high school reunion. My coworkers were astounded to figure out how old I was, because as soon as I started mentioning that it was my 40th, they started trying to do the math and instantly add up, really, how old is he? And they quickly figured it out and then continued to rub that into my face. But going back for the reunion was a lot of fun, seeing those people, catching up on those memories, finding out all the different things that happened in people's lives. And one of the things that I always find out from them that is just so exciting to me is what they're doing in the area of ministry. And what is it that is happening where they're doing things for Christ? I had the actual privilege of going to a Christian high school. And so I got an incredible education out of it and got to know a lot of people during that time. In fact, people that have gone all around the world. And not only did I go to high school there, but I also went to college. So a number of those people, and junior high. So some of those people I spent almost 10 years of my life with. And some of them, it just blessed me to see what has been taking place and what has gone on in their lives. And a lot of the stories were incredible and totally encouraging. When I got back here, I had a moment to reflect just a little bit. And then a few days after coming back from that incredible mountaintop experience of seeing all my friends back then, I heard about one friend that hadn't been able to attend. They had been in San Diego up till about a week before the reunion took place. And then they went back onto the mission field to Santa Cruz, Bolivia, where they have been there for 31 years, this couple. In fact, let me just go ahead and introduce you briefly to them. I've got to remember now to use my clicker. There we go. This is Jeff and Beth Haas. Oops, sorry, I hit the wrong button. Getting used to this one. Beth Haas there in the middle. Like I said, they've been with South American Missions, or SAM as it's known, for 31 years, and they left just before I got there, so I didn't get a chance to meet them. And then just a few days after the reunion and I got back, I received the news that Beth had been dealing with an infection for about 15 years. Doctors had been going crazy trying to figure out what had happened to her body. They didn't know. She had come back here to the United States for specialized medical care, done all kinds of visits. She'd have problems with like a back 1 month, a foot, one another month, a leg, and it was just moving around all in her body. Could not figure it out. When she got up here, one of the last things she did in her medical appointments was they discovered that one of her legs had a blood clot in it and that it would require surgery to remove the blood clot since it was slowing down the flow of blood through that particular, I can't remember if it was a vein or an artery. And so she thought about doing it here, but then that would delay her trip on the recovery down to Bolivia, and she didn't want to take the chance that the doctors wouldn't let her fly. And so as a result, she went ahead and arranged a specialist to come from Argentina to a hospital in Santa Cruz. She'd have the operation there. She had a regular cardiologist there. And so they were going to combine on this operation and take care of her. So within just a few days of the reunion, she had this operation scheduled. She went on back home with her family. And in the middle of the operation, they found the blood clot. They found that it was a whole lot larger than they ever discovered, even thought it would be on the MRI. It showed up much bigger. They were able to take care of it, pull it out of there, do what they could to clear it up. And then while she was on the table, her heart stopped. And they spent an extra half an hour doing nothing but trying to revive her. And she passed away on the table. Her mom was my English teacher through college. I had her a couple of different classes. And I had gotten to know Beth through high school, and then she had married, Jeff was one of my friends through college, and that's how they had not met until college. They were college sweethearts and had been married for 35 years, and God called her home. And Jeff, I promised myself I wasn't going to do this. Jeff wrote an incredible piece on Facebook and posted it. And people had been asking him, you know, about having such a short time with his wife and the blessing that she had been. It was kind of funny going through the pictures that they had posted on Facebook of family stuff. And one of their sons had put together a slideshow of different pictures and stuff. It was kind of hard to find a picture of just the two of them together, because all the pictures kind of look like some of these groups of people that they were ministering to at this conference. They were doing this ministry over here. Here's just their family down in Santa Cruz with their four kids, and I can't remember if that's an aunt in the picture or something else, but just incredible groups of people that they had spent and poured their lives into. And Jeff had basically said in this one short piece that he wrote, and then he put a passage from a book right behind it, is people were talking about how short their time had been together, and you know, is he going to miss not having that time of growing old with her? And his thing was something that I just thought was incredible. It was like, why not? Why not God calling her home at this time? She's done the work that she has been required to do, and for that, she's been looking for a homecoming. In fact, one of the kids had posted just a little snippet of a video where they were singing for one of their kids' birthdays, and they sang a little song that evidently they had learned for years, but it just had to do with basically, we give you another year here on earth. We thank you for it, God, because we know we're going to spend that time in heaven with you forever. And it just gave you that idea of, this is perspective. And I always wanted to know what it's like that motivates people to say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to spend everything I've got for ministry. I'm going to go ahead and serve God with everything that I have to the best of my ability. And I was going back through just the thoughts of, you know, since I've been in college, friends of mine that have been on the mission field or families that have been on the mission field that I've known, there have been five of these different losses. I mean, it costs a lot for ministry. And what motivates people to give back that kind of thing where they say, God, I'm going to lay this all on the line for you. There is not going to be a thing that I withhold. If there's a chance for me to do it, I'm going to do it. And I wanted to take a look at it. We're going to be going through Philippians and doing just kind of an overview. I know 2.5 years ago, I introduced a number of you to Epaphroditus, and we're going to talk just a little bit about him. We're also going to talk about Paul and his life, because I know you guys can't see this. This is one of those things that you can find online that just gives a timeline. If you Google this, timeline of the life of Paul, it just shares some of the stuff to kind of put things in perspective on where he's been and what he's done. And here we find that he basically, in about AD 52, 53, somewhere in there, he ministered to the church at Philippi. He was on a missionary journey, went up there during the second missionary journey, founded that church, found Lydia and several others to come together and started that little house group, house study type of thing, and was there with them for a while and then left, carried on, went to several other different places. Then around on his third missionary journey, he came back around. In fact, I've got a map here next. In fact, I can flip back and forth. Why not? Here's where right at the top of the Aegean Sea is where Philippi is located, very top of this little pinnacle. Greece and Macedonia are over in here. Asia, which is now modern-day Turkey, is over here. Rome and Italy are over in here. Anyways, they spent that second missionary journey here. He came back again around on his third missionary journey, ministered to him again. And later on, after this, he wrote the book of Philippians from Rome. While he was imprisoned in Rome, he went ahead and wrote them this epistle that we have today. And it's been called the Epistle of Joy. Everywhere through this is loaded, it's like every couple of verses, the word joy or a derivative of the word joy. And yet, Paul is writing this from an incredible position, and he wrote it during a time where he was absolutely facing death. He was in prison, and he knew that he was already there, and it had already been prophesied through Agabus earlier in his life that he was going to be going to Rome, and his purpose in going to Rome was to die. And so he knew all of this, and yet he still willingly went to Rome and wrote this epistle back to him. It's one of the most encouraging. If you are down, if you are hurting, if you are just in incredible pain, this is the place where I find some of the most incredible comfort in my life, is going back to this particular epistle and taking a look and seeing what it says that I can use in my life. But Paul had planted that church in Philippi. He's addressing those concerns to them, even though he's facing being beheaded. And he is beheaded at the end of within just probably just a few months after he finishes this book. There's some a little bit of clarity in the timeline, whether it was just a few months or whether he might have run just a little bit further out and then come back voluntarily and been beheaded at that time. But it's an incredible book when you look at the pain and the suffering that Paul's going through. He's addressing a church that's got some things going on with it, and yet his whole mission on this one is to impart joy into their lives. And let's go back to this for a second on the timeline. If we look at this, this is about 52, 54, somewhere in there, where he ministers to the Philippian church. And he goes ahead and journeys to Rome, knowing that he's not going to see them again after he's visited there twice and he's planted it there. The book of Philippians is known as the Epistle of Joy because of the fact that the word or a derivative of that is mentioned like 16 times through those short four chapters. You know what? I just realized that I passed on the wrong notes in your we'll get to that. In the church, it says giving back, but that's actually from 2.5 years ago. So I will go ahead and I don't know how that happened. So anyways, I will get you better notes from this. At some point, I'll have to do that. I just looked at that and going, you know, we spent so much time on Epaphroditus in the first couple of things. I will go ahead and fill in some of the gaps on this as we go, and it won't make any difference. You can write your own set of notes and be creative as you do it. Anyways, looking back on his ministry, he spent so much time with them during those two trips, and now he's writing from Rome, looking at it, knowing that it had been prophesied that he's going to give his life there in Rome. Ancient Philippi today kind of looks like this. You can see some of the flat spots. There's an ancient church that was built in like the second or third century, started right here in this location. But you can actually make out outlines of the old city sitting in there. Today, you can walk right in through those ruins and see some of the incredible stuff. one of the things that I just noticed was that my notes that I was going to do for fill in the blank there are not the ones that I had. That's okay. I am going to change over on something else here. I back up my backups. So I am going to the backup of the backup here. At least this part of the notes are correct for the screen here. Where he's writing from, and he's writing this, what's been called the Epistle of Joy, because joy is mentioned so many times, is a place called the Mamertine Prison. You can go ahead and visit that thing in Rome these days. It's a building that goes three stories up. You walk in the main floor and you find these little cell rooms, and they show you in there, and it's got these old lime washed whitewashed walls, and it looks really old and antique inside of there. I wish I had some better pictures that would blow up a lot better on screen for you on this. But this is what you walk in when you do the tour of it. You actually see all of this stuff. And while you're there, you walk past this drain in the floor. And this particular drain, and I did that, the drain in the floor right here, that they have a grate over it right now, is actually the downstairs section of it that they keep sealed off. This is kind of almost like just a large pit underneath. And that is where they actually really believe that the Apostle Paul was kept. Because he was sentenced to die, he would have been thrown in this, the equivalent of their dungeon. And on the side of the walls, to remind you of it, they have a list of all the famous people, I did it again, all the famous people that they have executed in the year they've executed them and how they executed them. Like, did they behead them? Did they pull them apart with horses? Did they, there's, I think, strangulati there, which is strangulation. There's all kinds of different ways that they executed people, but there's a list of, it's like, you know, here's our top 10 people that we executed. Aren't we proud of it? Kind of thing. And it's just incredible people through history, but the Apostle Paul is one of those where they went ahead and beheaded him. And so he is facing that, and this is where he's writing the Epistle of Joy from. Could you imagine being down inside that little sewer grate-like area? To give you an idea, there's somebody's leg and a foot right there. That shows you kind of the size of the hole that they lowered you down into to keep you in that space. He wrote it as the Epistle of Joy. One of those verses is, always be full of joy in the Lord. Again, I say it again, rejoice. I mean, he just has an incredible heart for those people that he's ministering to. And yet, the place that he's writing from is most likely this spot right here. I just have a hard time imagining that I would have that same attitude with it. Here's some of the verses that I have that Paul explains Paul's attitude. In 2 Corinthians 11, 23 through 28, it says, in labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often, from the Jews 5 times I received 40 stripes minus 1, 3 times I was beaten with rods, 1 I was stoned, 3 I was shipwrecked, a day in the night, have been in the deep, in journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils of the city, in perils of the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings, often in cold and nakedness. This is the life of Apostle Paul, and yet it's from these same circumstances that he's writing this as the Epistle of Joy. I just can't imagine having that kind of attitude. And the only way that I can explain that is that he has Christ living in him, his hope of glory. Ministry has the potential to cost your life. He writes in chapter 1, verse 20 of Philippians, for I fully expect and hope that I will never be ashamed, but I will continue to be bold for Christ as I have been in the past. And I trust that my life will bring honor to Christ, whether I live or die. For to me, living by means, living for Christ and dying is even better. But if I live, I can do more fruitful work for Christ. So I really don't know which is better. I'm torn between two desires. I long to go and be with Christ, which would be far better for me, but for your sakes, it is better that I continue to live. That's the kind of attitude that he has as he's really literally expending himself for the finish line. He can see that finish line ahead of him, and he knows that, and yet he's riding with this kind of joyous expectancy, knowing that that's the kind of life he wants to lead and that he has been continuously living. This is a picture by an Italian artist by the name of, I'm going to blow my only shot at Italian here. Tintoretto, I think, is the best I can come up with. Can anybody correct me if I'm really killing it? By the way, I mispronounce names so easily. I usually apologize to somebody in advance, even if their name is Bob, that I can probably slaughter their name. So anyways, this title is titled The Martyrdom of St. Paul, and I know it's kind of dim and dark, but in this particular one, you have a soldier, a Roman soldier, who has taken his armor off, laid it at his feet. He has a sword here, and he's wielding it as Paul is sitting upright and praying. He's seeing an angel in heaven ready to receive him, kind of a depiction of heaven in the background here. And he knows that death is in within seconds, and yet he is communicating his expectancy of seeing God. That's just an incredible, incredible view of how I would love to go out someday, knowing that whatever the circumstance is, I can see my Savior's face and I'm ready to meet him no matter what. It's an incredible view of it. Epaphroditus had that same type of thing. This was a co-worker that started out in Philippi, accepted Christ in Philippi, and has gathered up an offering from the church there, and he has taken that offering all the way across to Rome to meet Paul's needs while he's under arrest in Rome. One of the things that they did was you had to, if you were thrown in prison, you had to supply everything, your own clothes, your own food, your own writing utensils, whatever you had need of, somebody had to bring it to you. And in this particular case, it was a church gathering up every dime that they could to send to Paul in Rome so that he could eat and live there while he's in prison. And basically Epaphroditus did that, and then it says Paul's writing to the church back at his home church saying, and he certainly was ill. And this is from chapter 2, verse 27. And he certainly was ill. In fact, he almost died. But God had mercy on him and also on me so that I would not have one sorrow after another. Verse 28, so I am all the more anxious to send him back to you, for I know you will be glad to see him. And then I will not be so worried about you. Welcome him in the Lord's love and with great joy, and give him the honor that people like him deserve. For he risked his life for the work of Christ, and he was at the point of death while doing for me what you could not do from far away. In other words, he had almost died ministering to Paul. He had gone there to help, but in doing so, he went within just an inch of death itself. He was willing to go that far that if you know, he had died, I'm sure he would have said his mission to Paul was a success. But in this case, he's getting ready to go back. And he's saying, welcome him back. Just love on him because he really went all out for me. Let's see. Epaphroditus, his name means charming. And usually people would try and live up to their names. If you had a frown on yourself all the time and your name was charming, I think people would be mean enough to point it out. So anyways, he was a leader in the Philippian church. And like I said, he was in charge of rounding up this offering that was probably enough for Paul to live on for a year or two. And then he had to travel by foot and by boat all the way up to Rome. And it probably took him a few months to get up there. Transportation, notoriously slow. And in the process of doing that, it seems like he took ill and barely got there alive and barely stayed alive for a while. And while he was there, he was trying to recover. And by the time he was able to recover, Paul was ready to send him back. But it's like, what if the church has already gotten word that he might have died? Because you know how slow the mail would have been in those days. So basically, his whole thing was, welcome him back. You know, he just about died for doing this ministry to me. And he's not a failure in doing it. He did what he came to do. I'm sending him back. Please, please welcome him back. What I want to do is have you guys take a look at defining what ministry means to you. If you were going to go to minister to somebody, what would you write as your own definition, your own little mini one or two sentences of what would be how I would see doing something for God in ministry? Would you be able to put something down because it's right there on the tip of your tongue? You know what it is to minister to somebody, minister to the needs that people have. How would you put that into words? Here's what I defined it as for me. It's working alongside God to move people closer to Christ. If I can do something where I talk to somebody, whether I am quiet the entire time, whatever I'm doing, if I am moving them one step closer to where they are, whether they're a Christian or even a non-Christian, if I'm moving them closer to where God is, I think that is my definition of ministry, where I'm being successful at doing something. In Philippians 2:25-30, it says this, "But I think it's necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother, co-worker and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs." Knowing that this is the original purpose that he did there, he wants to make sure that he sends him back triumphantly. That people don't look at the fact that, oh, he got there and he barely made it. What a loser. I mean, he wants to make sure that they don't have that view of him. And in doing so, he tells them these are the things that are the most important. He gave them those ministry titles of brother. Somebody that is close enough to be part of my own family. Co-worker, he's an equal working alongside me. Fellow soldier, he's actually a warrior for the faith. Messenger, he's bringing back words of what has been going on. He's got relevant news that's up to date that you need to hear. Those are things that he's letting them know as this is the important things that he did. This is so... I mean, give him a triumphant lap around the church when he comes back, okay? You know, he's kind of afraid that they'll look at him because he just broke his health while he was there, that he was some kind of a failure. But instead, it's an incredible thing. Things to do here. Ministry to others is never found in a vacuum. And the verse that I pulled from what we're looking at in chapter 4, it says, "Keep putting into practice all you've learned and received from me, everything you've heard from me and saw me doing. Then the God of peace will be with you." We find that anytime we're ministering to other people, people are always watching us. People are always looking, whether we can see them looking or not. They're always knowing what's going on. And if you do something where you expend yourself into the ministry of doing something for others, people are going to be encouraged by it. People are going to be blessed by it. And blessed in ways that you will have no idea. Years later, you can see some incredible results that you had no idea that God was using you in that way. Here's another one. Ministry is a gift. "For as you know, you Philippians were the only ones who gave me financial help when I first brought you the good news and then traveled on from Macedonia. No other church did this. Even when I was in Thessalonica, you sent help more than once. I don't say this because I want a gift from you. Rather, I want you to receive a reward for your kindness. At the moment, I have all I need and more. I am generously supplied with the gifts you sent me with Epaphroditus. They are a sweet-smelling sacrifice, that is acceptable and pleasing to God. It's an incredible way that God has allowed us to do things, in that we can actually minister to somebody and see the results years down the road. Or we don't see any results and we find out about what took place when we get to heaven. There are going to be some incredible things that are going to be a total surprise to us, where we see God has done some awesome work in our lives. One of the things that I want you to know about this is that, looking to see if I skipped a, yep, I did. I skipped over a little bit. Here we go. Ministry to others is never found in a vacuum. This is one of those principles that I see here from chapter 4, verse 9. It says, keep putting into practice all you've learned and received from me, everything you heard from me and saw me doing. Then the God of peace will be with you. In other words, he's already realizing that anything that I do can be reported back. It may not go back with Epaphroditus. It may go back with somebody else years down the road. Somebody's going to tell a story, and my name's going to be in it. And this is how you guys have learned what I've done, how I do my ministry. And so as a result of that, I want you guys to keep learning, keep receiving, keep learning, keep receiving, back and forth. Everything you heard from me and saw me doing, because I'm willing to be an example to you. That's an incredible part of that ministry. And then we had that ministry is a gift. I don't think I've read this verse yet. Let's try this. Ministry is a gift. As you know, you Philippians were the only ones who gave me financial help when I first brought you the good news and then traveled on from Macedonia. No other church did this. Even when I was in Thessalonica, you sent me help more than once. And I don't say this because I want a gift from you. Rather, I want you to receive a reward for your kindness. Oh, wait, I did read this. I'm sorry. Well, I'll continue in verse 18. At the moment, I have all that I need and more. I am generously supplied with the gifts you sent me from Epaphroditus. They are a sweet-smelling sacrifice that's acceptable and pleasing to God. Here's just kind of an idea of this one area here where it says, people have gifts that they give. Sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's something that they do. Rover, your gift test indicates that you do best at fetching and sitting at my feet, but our family needs someone to sit on the branches and sing. Do you think you can handle that? And obviously you can tell that Rover's thrilled with that idea. You know, our gifts and our abilities that God gives us are incredible, and we find the right places to use them to plug in and do things. It is an incredible blessing to us, and it's an incredible blessing to others. Trying to struggle at something you can't really do just because somebody said, here's a hole, plug it, not necessarily the best thing. And you can see that Paul is trying to encourage them, use your gifts, do what you can to minister to others in incredible ways, and you will really fulfill the ministry in your life. Here's another one. Mr. Norlander, as your gift assessment placement consultant, I have the task of connecting you with the ministry of the church that you have tested most gifted to perform. After much deliberation, it is my conviction that you'd serve the church best as pew sitter. Well, that's the last thing that anyone would ever want to hear. You know, God has allowed us to have different talents, different ministries, different gifts, all kinds of things that we have that we can place in service for him. For some of us, it might be in the next week building the church, might be doing something like providing food, providing a place to stay. There's all kinds of things just in this next two-week period that are going to be incredible that you guys can use, gifts that are hospitality or gifts of service or anything else. Some of you will be using your gifts in other incredible ways. Talking to people, ministering to hurting hearts, just awesome things that you can do for God as long as you're willing to do so. What can you learn from the life of Epaphroditus? I mean, this was a guy that was willing to literally go to within an inch of his life as far as how sick he was and how hurting he was. He was willing to expend himself that much, no matter what the cost. And yet, he was a blessing to the people around him. Let's see. One of the things that I wanted to think about for just a minute is that whenever we do that, sometimes we get results that we don't expect, that we don't see. And sometimes those results can be hurtful. Have you ever been hurt by others in ministering to them? And in chapter 1, verse 15, it says, "It's true that some are preaching out of jealousy and rivalry, but others preach about Christ with pure motives. They preach because they love me, for they know that I have been appointed to defend the good news. Those others do not have pure motives as they preach about Christ. They preach with selfish ambition, not sincerely, but intending to make my chains more painful to me. But that doesn't matter. Whether their motives are false or genuine, the message about Christ is being preached either way. So I rejoice, and I will continue to rejoice." There's going to be times where you're going to feel discouraged in ministering to other people. You're not going to see the results that you expected. Or you're going to find that people are just being negative about what you in particular are doing. And to know that Paul could have this kind of an attitude where he's like, you know, it doesn't really matter as long as the name of Christ is getting out there. As long as people are being ministered to in some way, I'm all for it. That's where I want to see things happen. That's the definition that he has of ministry. Can you live a life making a gift of ministry? In chapter 4, verse 1, he says, "Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stay true to the Lord. I love you and long to see you, dear friends, for you are my joy and the crown I receive for my work." This gives me the idea of, and something we've got to keep in mind out here, the church is not the building. I mean, what we're going to be working on that we call the church in the next few days, it's still not the building. I mean, we can call it something different, like chapel or whatever else. The church is the people. I mean, that is the church. And so when we do this, when we keep this going, we're going to be rubbing elbows with people. There are going to be times when our feelings might get hurt when we're working in close proximity to others. We may be preparing a meal and somebody doesn't like that particular flavoring that we just added to it. Wow. It's not going to be a big deal. The important thing is that we are ministering to God, and as a result of whatever we're doing, however we're taking care of it, it's going to be doing it because of the people around us are my joy and the crown that I receive for my work. Right now, I'm going to have the ushers come forward for communion. You guys would come up and do that. You know, as we have communion this morning, I remember that Christ did an incredible ministry for us. Not only did he spend those 33 years of his life on earth for us, but he also took that life and he expended it at the cross. He literally did give his all. And in doing so, each time we meet, we tend to remember that in the presence of communion. We know that he has loved us so much that he was willing to give it 100% and more. This morning, I just want us to reflect on it as we think about that and think about what ministry is. Think about the example of Epaphroditus and Paul and what they were able to do. I mean, these are men that not only examples to us, but they had the ability to start changing the way that the world worked back in the Roman world. And it's because of them that Christianity took off and did some incredible things and today continues to bless the entire world. When we come to communion, we look at Christ's sacrifice and know that it would be impossible for us to even come close to matching that kind of an incredible gift of laying it all down for us. The Bible tells us that in the same night that he was betrayed, that he took bread and he broke it and he gave it to his disciples and he told them, "This is my body, eat." And in the same way, he also took the cup and told them that it was a new covenant, a new promise made in his blood. And for each of them to drink. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we just want to thank you that you have given us just an example in the writings that Paul has made of what joy is. And as part of that, we have the examples of the lives of these two men who are willing to go the distance. One of whom was ready to expend himself so much that he got sick and almost died, and the other was willing to go to a beheading, that he was willing to lay everything on the line. Father, knowing that's the kind of sacrifice that we can be called to make, we know that in our lives and the way that we have opportunities to do, we can give back in ministry to you. That we can put ourselves out there. And Father, it's not often that someone is called to actually die, whether it's here at home or even away on the mission field. We know that attitude in us where we're willing to give it our best, to give it our all, is what you're asking for. We thank you for your example of laying down your life on the cross, knowing that for us, we will rarely ever have that opportunity where we'll be tasked to actually lay down our life, not to pick it back up again. But Father, with joy, we can give our ministry in so many different ways in using ourselves for the kingdom. We thank you for those opportunities that are coming up in the next couple of weeks that we have the ability to go hands-on with building this church. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. This is our benediction, and let's go ahead and stand. Now, all glory to God, who is able to keep you from stumbling, and who will bring you into his glorious presence, innocent of sin, and with great joy. You're dismissed.